Jarrett, welcome back to the Raptor Show. We were actually just talking about it. We saw the line for tonight's game, and, you know, whatever, that's a separate conversation. But we also saw that Gary Trent Jr. is a little questionable. He got a little back stiffness. Are you ready to play tonight is the question.
Man, I'm ready. I've been ready the entire season.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very ready to play. Always ready to play. This is what they, you know, get paid to play basketball. So I'm definitely ready, man.
Do you get a sense from Darko and the staff if it's going to be a night where you're going to get used? Like tonight, you guys might only have 9 or 10 players. You know, it was the same thing kind of against Cleveland the other, or against Sacramento the other night, but you didn't get used in that one. What are those conversations like? They give you a heads up, hey, Garrett, be ready. You're probably going to go in tonight, or are you finding out on the fly?
Yeah. The game that I did play that I was actually in the rotation for a little bit, it was in the first half in LA against the Clippers. My coach, who was James Coco at the time, he told me prior to the game that there's a chance I might play. And, you know, and before the games, coaches will let you know before, definitely, that if there's a chance that you may get in. You know, Darko is one of the guys that the first coach I've ever had that told me, that told guys, you know, during shoot around, this is the 10 guys we're going to play tonight. These are the 9 guys or the 8 guys we're going to play tonight in the first half. That may change in the second half, or it may change because of foul trouble. But that was the first coach that was very definitive on what the rotation would be like to start. And I really appreciated that.
Wait, why don't other coaches do that?
That's a great question. I don't know. A lot of coaches have a mindset of, you know, everybody needs to be ready regardless. Okay. And but I think it really puts people in the right front mindset that, you know, I know when I'm coming in, I know when I'm going out, I know I'm going to play tonight, or I know I'm not in rotation. If we're down by 20 and, you know, in the first half, he may change it up.
Right.
So I really appreciate him for how he does that.
So in a game like the one against Sacramento where you guys got down, I think you were down 38 at one point. You know, you haven't been told, hey, you're going to be in the rotation for that game. What is that process like for you? Like, how are you staying ready once it hits a spot where, hey, the rotation plans might change, I might get called in here?
No question. So, again, when he tells us that, he's reiterated that it's only for the first half. When it gets to a, you know, a blowout situation, I'm always getting my body ready. You know, whether he wants to put me in or whether he wants to just go with the young guys and just let them hoop. Mentally, I'm like, okay, if we're up by 30, down by 30, there's a chance I may play, and I may get some hot packs and get these get my muscles ready. Luckily, at home we have seats that heat up on our Raptors bench, so I don't have to use the hot packs as much, but it is a little colder in our gym, so maybe for my hands I might get the hot packs. But mentally, you know, it's common sense. We're down 30. Mm-hmm. The starters are going to come out. You know, with a decimated team like we have, I probably will play if it's a blowout, you know, one way or the other in most situations. So I just have a mindset of be ready.
So what do you tell the guys in a difficult game like that, like against the Kings, right? Like, obviously it was kind of one-sided the whole time. And, you know, but we always see you up and talking to people. What do you say to the younger guys in those moments?
Yeah. And I would disagree with you. It was one-sided, like, at the end of the second quarter.
Like, yeah, you guys let go of the rope a little bit. That was
you
true.
Know? Yeah. Yeah, we just you let go of the rope. And with a team that's that, you know, potent offensively, when you let go of the rope with the lack of margin of error that we have because of who we have on our team right now, it's very difficult. So, throughout the game, just telling the guys, continue to play, continue to do our thing, you know, stick to the game plan. And once, you know, the game got out of hand to 20, 20, 30, you talk about why it got out of hand. You know, we can't turn the ball over and not run back. Mm-hmm. That looks bad on everybody. And a lot of the guys that are playing now are playing for contracts, playing to stay in the NBA, whether it be playing for a contract next season, are playing to stay in the NBA next season. Everything shows up. People watch everything. So there's never a situation where we should not ever turn the ball over or one of our teammates turns it over and we don't sprint back on defense. First and foremost, that makes us look bad. It makes the team look bad. It makes the product look bad. And especially the fans that we have, this is something that we definitely should focus on. And it's all pure effort. It has nothing to do with skill, nothing to do with, you know, the talent level that we have. It's all about giving effort, and that's something that we can't have.
So, Gary, in terms of those guys who are playing for their next contracts or their, you know, their spot in the NBA, I know you're a leader who's available to everyone on that team, but when you have guys who are coming in off of 10 days, like Jamias, a couple of guys before that, you turned a handful of 10 days into a very long NBA career at one point. How much are you trying to talk to those guys and help those guys through that? Because I imagine it's a tough balance for a guy like Jamias, for example, of you got to come in and you have to fit the role the team's asking you to play, but you also want to show out a little bit and show what you can do because you might only get into two or three games. What's that like? Have you been at ear for those guys?
Definitely. I mean, I think I'm in a unique position to be able to tell them this is exactly what I've been through. I've been exactly in your position. What's up, too? That's my son. I've been in your position, brother. Like, there are not many people that can look you in the eye and say, I know exactly what you're going through. So for me to be able to have the opportunity to talk to guys like Jamias and DJ when he came on before he got the two-way contract, and tell him it's not about you shooting the ball. You know, Jamias was upset he's not making as many shots. I'm like, bro, it's not about that. You're affecting the game in a way where everybody can see it with your defensive tenacity, your ability on that end of the court. The shots are going to fall. And just having that mindset of not doing too much, don't be somebody that you're not. You're not expected to be here and average 20 points a game. You're expected to be here, cause havoc defensively, and run back when a turnover happens, be in the right position defensively, you know, do whatever coach asks of you. And they're not going to ask anything that you cannot do. So I've definitely been in his ear. A guy like Javon, I've been in a situation where I'm guaranteed for the rest of the season, but who knows what happens next. Obviously, like Jonte. So I'm definitely in those guys' ears to remind them that it's not about having 15 points. It's not about having, you know, non-assist. It's about doing the things that you're supposed to do at a high level, and that will show teams that you are very coachable and you can be a rotation player in this league.
Can guys hear that, the element of that, of trusting that the shots are going to drop? Like, obviously we know, you know, if you get 20, even if you get 20 threes up over 2 10-days, like, that's a tiny sample, right? Like, that's not enough for you to show, hey, this is what I can do as a three-point shooter. Obviously, we have the G League stats. We know Jamias, you know, shooting 40% down there. But you had some of that when you were on your 10 days as well. Like, the three-point shots didn't drop or whatever. How hard is it for those guys to hear that? And do you think they are hearing it?
Right. It's very hard, you know. As you stated, when I was coming in, I shot 39% in the G League, I think, and then got here, got to the, I think I shot like 15% when I got my call-ups. And it's tough because it's 10 days. You have 10 days to make, you know, to make an impact and to make an impression. And it's difficult to hear, but that's why you continue to tell them. You know, if you weren't doing your job, they would not continue to play you. They would not continue to put you on the Malik Monks, the De'Aaron Foxes. They would find, you know, they don't need much of a reason not to play you. You're on a 10-day. So at the end of the day, you must be doing something right. And just, you know, I was so happy he hit that three at the top of the key last game in the second half. Jamias, I'm talking about just getting a feel, getting a comfortability to be able to be yourself on the offensive end. That's probably the most difficult part of being on a 10-day, not to mention you don't know many plays. And then if you have to play point guard, that's a whole other thing, being able to get people in their spots. So I'm happy with how he's been able to play on the defensive end. And I think offensively it's going to be easier and easier for him as the games go on.
Hey, Garrett, earlier this week, the Raptors held their annual open coaches practice, right? You got to get coaches in and some media got to go as well. And so I got to watch you guys actually work and what you guys do behind closed doors. And one thing, I mean, you guys worked on a ton of things as always, but one thing you guys worked on a lot that I thought was interesting was you guys worked a lot on fundamentals, things like boxing out, closing out, pressuring the ball, you know, you go down the line. How unique of a situation is that? Is that because, like, you know, the team is young. Like, you've been in a lot of different places. Like, how often are coaches devoting practice time towards these type of things?
I think it's a lot of it has to do with the youth of our team. You know, every team is different. And a lot of times, you know, Darko, this is his first year as a head coach. So he has to get a sense of the players, not to mention we've had a different team every single, you know, every quarter of the season has basically been a different team. So you have to get a feel for your team and a feel for your players and understand where they're at, you know, talent-wise, skill level, IQ-wise. So with a young team, you know, a lot of times the fundamentals, you know, you can't take them for granted nowadays because the league is so young. You know, boxing out the right way, not boxing out with the old school back to the basket box out. That's null and void now. People are too athletic, too quick, jump too high. It's a whole different way that you have to box out nowadays. And, you know, pressuring the ball, understanding when to pick up the ball, where to pick up the ball. All of these things are something that has to be taught at a professional level. It's very different in college. It's very different in high school. So I think it's just – and every team is different. So I think just having a coach that's very, you know, detail-oriented is great, especially for a young team. And it's – you know, we have guys that are sponges and soak it all in, and that will allow Darko to put the product on the floor that he wants to have on the floor.
Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, really, because you got to standardize a lot of it, right? When you go from team to team, even understanding – you know, different terminology on defense, things like that for newer guys to join different programs. I am curious in terms of, obviously you've been in Darko's practices all season with the team. Do you get a sense if he spends more time working on offense versus like working on defense? I'm sure you guys spend lots of time on both, but if it kind of leans one way or the other, what would you say?
I would say probably more defense. Okay. If we have shorter practices, it probably would be like a 15-minute segment on defense and maybe a 10-minute segment offensively. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, defense is going to win. Defense is what, you know, our team, especially when we're healthy, from the beginning of the season to now, you know, transition offense is the best way to score in the league. I don't care what team you're on.
Yeah.
You know, you look at all the analytics and just the eye test, people are going to score more in transition, period, point blank. So, how do you get in transition? You defend, rebound the ball, and you push it. Or you defend, get steals, and push it. Create turnovers and push it. And so, you know, from his standpoint, defense is the key to allowing us to get in our best offensive sets, which is transition. And on the flip side, we need to keep them out of transition offense so we can, you know, that's what we harped on about. The reason the Kings went on that run is we never got back on defense with the turnovers and the bad shots we take. So you get back so you can set a defense so you can then in turn defend, rebound, and get in transition to try to score yourself. It's pretty simple when you think of it that way, but it's a mindset that you have to obviously get guys to understand to try to go that way and have that mindset when we're on the court.
So I wasn't at this open practice, but one of the things that Will filled me in on from that was it seemed like Scotty was pretty involved, even though obviously physically he can't be super involved right now. He's still got the sleeve on his hand. Have you noticed since Scotty's been on the sideline a little bit, any sort of changes or development in terms of what he's contributing from a leadership and teammate perspective since he can't be on the floor?
That's a great question, man. I have noticed a lot, you know. I got to get on him. He needs to get out there right when a tip-off happens. He comes a little later, but he's talked. We've been talking a lot. You know, we sit right next to each other now. We did when after the game, you know, during the games when he was playing as well, but he's definitely being a little more vocal. For example, you know, we talk on the bench about, you know, we got to get on the guys because we let go of the rope leading going into halftime. And it's a situation like, okay, yeah, you know, Scotty, we get on him then. You talk about what you saw. You know, talk to him about what they should have done. And I definitely have seen him become more vocal, have a mindset of more of a leadership mindset, vocal leadership, because he can't go out and show them how to push the pace, how to be in a shift defensively, how to use your length defensively. You know, when you're in your playing, it's easy to say, I don't have to tell them, I'm just going to show them. Mm-hmm. But when you're not playing, then you have to use your voice more. And Scotty has always been a person that showed. He's never been a talker and not a shower. He's always been a shower. So this is going to help him. I think it's going to help his growth leadership wise by being able to be vocal and talk to guys about what he sees. And not that he's ever shied away from that, but I think this will even enhance it even more.
Do you feel like there's been a change in him too, especially because of all the trades that have happened? Pretty much everybody who has been on the team longer than him is gone, right? Has he taken more ownership of the team and sensed that there needs to be somebody who take more ownership of the team since those trades were made?
Yeah. I think that goes with it. I think that goes without saying, for sure. He, you know, he set up a dinner for us when we were in Phoenix. You know, he's taken on that, okay, the Toronto Raptors, you know, what that means to be the leader, what that means to be the, you know, it's crazy to, I'm about to say this, the elder statesman in terms of years here. Obviously, yeah. Chris Boucher has been here the longest, but wow, besides that, it is Scotty, and that's amazing to say. So
I think Gary hasn't beat by a few months.
Definitely, yeah. Taking it. Okay, G. Yeah. Trent. Okay, they were here together. G. Trent got here before the draft. Okay,
yeah.
Got you. So, he's definitely taking onus of that, and I'm excited to see his growth in that, you know, for the rest of the season, and then obviously beyond.
All right, I wanted to pivot too because I was thinking back on the interview you did last week, and you mentioned that you roomed with Kyle Lowry in high school, and you guys have pretty much been friends ever since then. Why were you guys rooming together in high school? Like what brought you guys together and what was he like at that time?
It was an Adidas All-American game, in Tennessee. So our senior year in Knoxville, Tennessee, cause we were playing at University of Tennessee, and they had a women's game, a girls game and a boys game. And I hadn't ever known about it. You know, I knew about the McDonald's game. I knew about Jordan brand, but I never knew about this. And maybe it was the first year they did it. It was like a 2K. I think it was sponsored by 2K maybe. And I was invited, Kyle, obviously. Dwight Howard, Josh Smith, a bunch of big names played in it. And, you know, we all knew each other from summer basketball. And I never knew Kyle like that, though. We had never really, you know, run across each other. So I'm rooming with this short, stubby guy from Philly. And we got to know each other really well. We got tight, got really cool. And there's always a story about I was supposed to leave at like 4 or 5 a.m. And I didn't. I wasn't in the room. Mm. You know, my parents came to the room. My dad came to the room, knocked on the door. I wasn't in the room. It was the night after the game or something. And Kyle always talks about my dad coming to the door. My dad was, you know, 6'8". My dad's 6'8", about 280. Yeah. And I was like, where's Garrett? And he's like, sir, I don't know. I don't know. It's 4:15 in the morning. And still to this day, he talks about how scared he is of my father because of that encounter. We've been close ever since. I think he had just turned 18 because it was in March, and I was about to turn 18 a couple of months later. Yeah. But you know, we played together obviously in Houston. My first couple of 10 days, we were in training camp together my rookie year, we've been tight ever since. Mm. Tight ever since.
Throwing caution to the wind. Where was Garrett at 4 a.m.?
I was in a friend's room.
Got you.
All right.
Got you.
By the way, okay, we'll leave that as it is. I found the rosters for this event, by the way, as you were answering there. So do you remember, so this is like, think of it as 2004 Adidas. Yeah. So there were two superstars. There was like a team this guy and a team that guy. Do you remember who the teams were?
Oh, I know it was Dwight. I would imagine Dwight.
No, sorry. The teams were named after NBA guys
after
at the time.
Players.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Dang. That really. for some reason, T-Mac is popping.
Yeah, you were on Team T-Mac. You, Kyle, okay. Al Horford, Joakim Noah. It was a loaded roster.
That's really good roster.
It was a fire roster.
Yeah, Josh Smith.
For sure.
Yeah. And then
I hope you guys didn't lose.
I don't have the results. I only have the press release of like some local newspaper of like, here's what's going on. Yeah, the other team was like Dwight Howard, Sebastian Telfair was on that one. Sebastian. That was Team KG was the other side of
KG,
it.
KG, okay. Okay.
Wow.
So it was a stacked game for sure. Mm. For sure, for sure. The girls game had a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to Kyle, actually, you obviously played with Kyle, as you mentioned, in Houston, but you guys most notably played against each other a lot. 2015, 2018, two playoff series. Actually, I guess 2020 as well, the Brooklyn series. Kyle was there for that one in the bubble.
Right. Yeah, the run-up back.
Yeah.
What was the scouting report on Kyle Lowry at that time? Because I'm sure that was a big item was, you know, Kyle, how are you guys supposed to cover Kyle? What was the coverage against Kyle?
He's going to run into you and flop and just throw his body, not trying to score, and just throw the ball up to get fouled, first and foremost. Don't go under the screen because he wants to shoot threes if you go under. He likes to shoot off the dribble. And hands, quick hands defensively, mm-hmm. you know. And then he's the biggest charge taker in NBA. Yeah. Watch out. Yeah. He's going to, no matter where he is, he's like the guy off Mr. Deeds. He's going to find himself in front of the person driving the ball. He
could very be sneaky.
He could have fell down with a layup, which he does, shooting a layup on the other end. We get it out, take it. Somebody can be driving it. He's going to be there to take a charge. It's like, what? How do you get there?
Even so, he has more charges this year, Garrett, than four entire teams.
No question.
Yeah.
No question.
Crazy.
He's amazing with it.
He already leads the Sixers in charges too, even though he's only been there for like less than a month. And that's incredible.
That's crazy.
Well, now I need to know the scouting report on Kyle Lowry on the golf course too, because I'm sure you guys did a lot of golfing in your time.
We did do a lot of golfing. He hits now he said he's changed, but he hits a little power fade. Goes about 275, 280. Now he's saying that he's hitting 300 with the new TaylorMade driver. So I gotta check him out this summer on that. Yeah, we'll see. But pretty decent as an approach. You know, I think he thinks his short game is his best attribute. So I think he's about a 7 handicap right now, maybe an 8. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So if we look at like the list of NBA players who at least like post a lot about golfing or talk a lot about golfing, it seems to be like guys who really shoot the three well are good at golf. Like Ray Allen's a big golfer. Steph's a big golfer. J.R. Smith's a big golfer. Do you like, obviously there is something to the hand-eye coordination of having good touch. Is that all it is? Is there something else that makes 3-point shooters good golfers?
Man, I've been mentioning that the longest. Mm. It's something about the touch. I don't know what it is. Doug McDermott, great golfer.
Mm. Matt Thomas, when he was here, great golfer.
Yeah.
Mike Penberthy, that's a name that y'all may not know.
That's a deep cut right there. All right.
Mike Penberthy from the Lakers, old school Lakers.
Okay.
Number 12, one of the championship teams with Kobe and Shaq. He's a +2, +3. Mm.
No, this is just Alex Caruso before he went bald. That's all this photo is.
Caruso, great golfer.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not the best 3-point shooter, but a great golfer.
Uh-huh.
Dylan Windler, great golfer. So I think it has something to do with touch, feel. I don't know. I think it probably does have something to do with that. But who knows? Dale Curry, obviously, great golfer.
Right.
Seth is pretty good as well too.
I imagine this is like primarily what you guys did in the bubble.
Man, me and Kyle played at least 6 rounds together, 5 or 6 rounds together. I played 18 total rounds.
Wow.
In the bubble. And I was there for like a month, a little over a month.
Did it get awkward when you guys were playing each other in the playoffs and you guys
I don't know if we played golf while we played.
Okay.
While we were in the playoffs.
Got you.
Well, y'all swept us, so it was only 4 games.
That team was really good.
I don't know if we played before, but I know for sure we played right before because we were talking about playing each other.
Yeah.
Y'all had a great squad, man.
Yeah.
Y'all had a great squad that year, and we were decimated by people not coming to the bubble. So
sure. Yeah.
It was all right though.
Yeah, there was the one game in that one where the Raptors, the bench scored 100 points. It was the first time it ever happened in a playoff game.
That was game four. Yeah. Crazy. I couldn't believe it. But we were bringing guys like Serge and Norm off the bench. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, y'all had a squad. Y'all had a squad.
Yeah, what could have been?
Game two, we should have won. I think I had 20-something going into the fourth, and I got like two shots after that.
Wow.
I turned it over at the end on like a handoff.
It's tough, but you know, at the same time, you know, the Raptors, I think back to that squad a lot, quite frankly, but you know, so that's more of a painful memory because I felt like we could have really done something, you know. We took it to game seven. Kyle was amazing in that.
Yeah.
That whole run, Kyle was amazing, man. So.
Yeah, it's tough. It really did feel like that could have, and like on top of the element of like if Kawhi stayed, Raptors are probably winning. Raptors are probably repeating.
All right, what are we doing
but then
here,
even
man?
Without oh, him, for sure. Even without him staying to take the Celtics to seven games in the bubble in the second round and stuff, it's tough. Garrett, I got one more ex-teammate one for you before we let you go here. You played on the Pelicans the last couple years. These last couple weeks, probably. I know Brandon Ingram had the knee injury last night. Hopefully that's just a shorter-term thing. I don't know how much you get to pay attention to other teams like this on the day-to-day, but what have you been able to pick up from the Pelicans kind of finally finding that stride it looked like the Ingram-Zion core has been looking for the last little while?
Yeah, look, can y'all hear me?
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah.
Oh, we might have lost them.
I'm frozen.
Okay,
I'm frozen.
There you go.
But I'm frozen over here, fellas. Y'all got me? Okay. B.I., I think they're just understanding what each of them do well, and they understand how to, lack of a better term, allow, like, get out of each other's way and allow them to do that. And, you know, and I mean, when I say all of them, B.I., Zion, C.J., they kind of take turns in terms of being the playmaker. And defensively, you know, Herb Jones is elite. B.I. has upped his defensive, his quality of defensive play, I think. And they're learning to mesh. And at the end of the day, they're so talented offensively that it's very difficult to outscore them. I mean, I actually watched the game last night when they were, when B.I. got hurt, and I was a little, you know, sad for that, obviously, but just them understanding and having enough time to play in, you know, all three of them play together to find their stride has been great to watch. I think it's a matter of just them understanding each other's games, learning where they want the ball, where the other player needs to be when they make plays. And they mesh really well together. Like the team was built around Zion at the end of the day, Zion and B.I. So having a guy like C.J. McCollum that can spot up, shoot, and create a little bit when need to, obviously. Zion is a monster in the paint. B.I. is shooting a little more threes. He shot a lot against us.
That was crazy.
like 10. And I told him I needed you to do this all the time the last 2 years. Like, you have to shoot more threes. That's what allowed Jason Tatum to go from here to here.
Right.
You know, 4 3-point attempts to 8 or 9. And B.I. has that capability of being able to shoot at a high clip. He needs to shoot more of them. So I just think them knowing each other is really the biggest reason why they've been able to do what they've been able to do. And, you know, I credit Willie for you know, he's had a rough time with injuries and not having guys all together. I credit him for keeping that together and then allowing them to mesh when they got together.
Got you. All right, Garrett, appreciate your time. Hopefully we see you in the game in a couple hours, because it's OKC's a tough. They're tough, man.
Man.
Yeah.
Very tough.
Yeah.
Shea Gilgeous is he's my MVP vote for sure.
Ooh.
Nice. That was going to be segment four today, but you already set it up for us. That's great. This is a great addition to the show. He's previewing later segments for us. This is perfect.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you, Garrett.
All right. Thank you.